जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरवान चारी जमुना तीरवान चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदानन्दन व्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरवान चारी जामुन तीरा वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव राधा माधव राधे, जय राधा माधव जय राधा माधव राधा माधव जय राधा माधव। जय पंचतत्व जय पंचतत्व पंचतत्व जय पंचतत्व। जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय प्रभुपाद।
Shripad Pranam Sipariraj Kacharya Sotra Sasashi Shemadis Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Iskam Bibidi Founder Chai Shri Prabhupada Ki Grantharajan Bhagavatam Ki Samvedu Gaura Bhaktivinda Ki Gaura Pramanande. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकां। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साक्षातं सहगना रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवां साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगनललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते कोपेश कोपिका कान्ता राधकान्ता नमोऽस्तु ते। दत्तकाञ्चन गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
दिस मॉर्निंग वी रीड फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 Chapter 2, verse 32. Chapter is entitled Prayers by the Demigods for Lord Krishna in the Womb.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yenye Ravindaksha Vimuktamaninas. Yenye Ravindaksha Vimuktamaninas. Yenye Ravindaksha Vimuktamaninas. tvayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhaya tvayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhaya tvayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhaya aruhya krishrena parampadam tata aruhya krishrena parampadam tata aruhya krishrena parampadam tata patantyadho nadrita yushmadangraya patantyado nadrita yushvadangraya patantyado nadrita yushvadangraya yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya Aruhya krishrena parampadam tata patantyado nadrita yushmadangraya yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya Aruhya krishrena parampadam tata patantyado nadrita yushmadangraya yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya Aruhya krishrena parampadam tata patantyado nadrita yushmadangraya yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya Aruhya krishrena parampadam tata patantyado nadrita yushmadangraya yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya Aruhya krishrena parampadam tataha patantyado nadrita yushmadangraya
Come on, someone else.
Yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya aruhya krishrena parampadam tataha patantyado nadrita yushmadangraya
Mataji
yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya aruhya krishrena parampadam tataha patantyado nadrita yushmadangraya
Ye anye anyone or all others. Aravinda Aksha, O Lotus Eyed One. Vimuktamanina, falsely considering themselves free from the bondage of material contamination. Dvayi, unto you. Astabhavat, speculating in various ways, but not knowing or desiring more information of your lotus feet. Avishuddha Buddhaya, whose intelligence is still not purified, and who do not know the goal of life. Aruhya, even though achieving. Krichrena, by undergoing severe austerities, penances and hard labor. Parampadam, the highest position, according to their imagination and speculation. Tataha, from that position. Patanti, they fall. Adha, down into material existence again. Anadrita, neglecting devotion to. Yushmat, your. Angraya, lotus feet. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The first half of the translation is like an introduction, so I'll just read that separately. Someone may say that aside from devotees who always seek shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, there are those who are not devotees but who have accepted different processes for attaining salvation. What happens to them? In answer to this question, Lord Brahma and the other demigods said, and then the actual translation starts, O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. Please repeat. O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. It's almost a 3-page purport, so please focus. Many different topics Prabhupada covers here. Purport. Aside from devotees, there are many others, non-devotees, known as karmis, jnanis, or yogis, philanthropists, altruists, politicians, impersonalists, and voidists. There are many varieties of non-devotees who have their respective ways of liberation, but simply because they do not know the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, although they falsely think that they have been liberated and elevated to the highest position, they fall down. As clearly stated by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 9.3, Ashraddhana purusha dharmasya sya parantapa apraapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vatmani. Those who are not faithful on the path of devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror foes, but return to birth and death in this material world. It doesn't matter whether one is a karmi, jnani, yogi, philanthropist, politician, or whatever. If one has no love for the lotus feet of the Lord, one falls down. That is a verdict given by Lord Brahma in this verse. There are persons who advocate accepting any process and who say that whatever process one accepts will lead to the same goal. But that is refuted in this verse, where such persons are referred to as vimuktamanina, signifying that although they think they have attained the highest perfection, in fact they have not. In the present day, big politicians all over the world think that by scheming they can occupy the highest political post, that of president or prime minister. But we actually see that even in this life, such big prime ministers, presidents and other politicians, because of being non-devotees, fall down. Padantyata. To become president or prime minister is not easy. One must work very hard, Aruhya Krishnena, to achieve the post. And even though one may reach his goal, at any moment one may be kicked down by material nature. In human society, there have been many instances in which great exalted politicians have fallen from government and become lost in historical oblivion. The cause of this is avishuddha buddhaya. Their intelligence is impure. The Shastra says, Nate vidu swartha gatim hi vishnum, 7531. One achieves the perfection of life by becoming a devotee of Vishnu, but people do not know this. Therefore, stated in Bhagavad Gita 12.5, Klesho dikatarastesham avyakta sakta chetasam. Persons who do not ultimately accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead and take to devotional service, but who instead are attached to impersonalism and voidism, must undergo great labor to achieve their goals. This verse is from 10.14.4. It's often quoted along with Tri Shloka. Shriyasritim bhaktim udasyate vibho klishyanti ye kevala bodhalabdhaye. To achieve understanding, such persons work very hard and undergo severe austerities. But their hard labor and austerities themselves are their only achievement, for they do not actually achieve the real goal of life. Dhruva Maharaj at first wanted to achieve the greatest material kingdom and greater material possessions than his father, but when he was actually favored by the Lord, who appeared before him to give him the benediction he desired, Dhruva Maharaj refused it, saying, Swamin kritardosmi varam nayache. Now I am fully satisfied. I do not want any material benediction. From Haribhakti Surudaya 7.28. This is the perfection of life. Yam labdhvacha param labham manyate nadikam tataha. Bhagavad Gita 6.22. If one achieves the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, one is fully satisfied and does not need to ask for any material benediction. At night, no one can see a lotus, for lotuses blossom only during the daytime. Therefore, the word Arvindaksha is significant. One who is not captivated by the lotus eyes or transcendental form of the Supreme Lord is in darkness, exactly like one who cannot see a lotus. One who has not come to the point of seeing the lotus eyes and transcendental form of Shamsundara is a failure. Premanjanachurita bhakti vilochanena santasadeva hridayeshu vilokayanti. Those who are attached to the Supreme Personality budded in love always see the Lord's lotus eyes and lotus feet, whereas others cannot see the Lord's beauty and are therefore classified as anadrita yushmat angaya, or neglectful of the Lord's personal form. Those who neglect the Lord's form are surely failures on every path in life. But if one develops even a little love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is liberated without difficulty. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead recommends in Bhagavad Gita 9.34, Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Simply think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer some slight homage to me. Simply by this process, one is guaranteed to return home back to Godhead, and thus attain the highest perfection. The Lord further affirms in Bhagavad Gita 18.54-55, Brahma bhuta prasannatma nasho chati na kankshati samas sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param bhaktyamam abhijanati yavan yascha smitatvatah tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tadanantaram. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God.
Yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninastvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya aruhya krichrena param padam tata patantyado natrita yushmadangraya.
O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe penances and austerities to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. How many devotees present here know this shloka?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Handful, huh? How many have heard of this shloka, even if you haven't memorized it? A few more? Yeah, so this is a very, very famous shloka. The prayers by the demigods headed by Lord Brahma for Lord Krishna in the womb. A very famous shloka quoted dozens, maybe hundreds of times by Srila Prabhupada especially. It's also found quoted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita several times. Very central shloka for this chapter, and one of the very, very famous shlokas, particularly because Prabhupada would use this verse to refute the Mayavadis and the impersonalists who consider themselves liberated. And the verse very clearly says that vimukta-maninas, that they consider themselves liberated or consider themselves very elevated. Various kinds of non-devotees, Prabhupada lists them here in the purport. Karmis, jnanis, yogis, philanthropists, altruists, politicians, impersonalists, voidists. And in their respective fields, they consider themselves very elevated, maybe even liberated, vimukta-manina. But because of their impure consciousness, avishuddha buddhaya patanti adho, they have to fall down. They cannot actually maintain their high positions without being attracted to the Lord's lotus feet. So as we can see in the purport, Prabhupada has gone into great detail, 3 pages of explanation of this verse, because it's such an important shloka, because he quoted it so many times in his lectures, conversations, and elsewhere in his books. So in the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada talks about the big politicians. They think they can occupy the highest post, but they get extricated, they get evacuated, or they get removed from their post. Often Prabhupada would comment that mostly these politicians are in very elderly age. According to Vedic scriptures, panchasordham vanam vrajet, at the end of life, one should retire from such activities. And we see in our history, so many of the great kings, they retired from their royal positions and went to the forest for meditation. But in the modern day, we see the politicians are all in their 60s, 70s, 80s even, and they're hanging on to power by whatever means they can, by hook or crook. And Prabhupada is very critical of these kinds of leaders. And particularly in the 70s, there was one president in America whom Prabhupada often would quote in this regard, that he was, American president even then and today is still considered the most prestigious, powerful position in the world. But this president lost his office because of some indiscretions. Anyone know who we're talking about? Which president? Nixon, President Nixon. Even Kennedy, actually. Prabhupada sometimes quoted President Kennedy was assassinated while in office. President Nixon is the more famous one as far as Prabhupada would quote. So President Nixon was in the early 70s, he was the President of the United States. He was selected with a very large majority. But during his office, he was involved in some scandal, which was actually, it's called the Watergate scandal. And Prabhupada was well aware of this, and he discussed sometimes with his disciples about this scandal President Nixon was involved in, where he was using the CIA and the FBI not for protecting the country, but actually to spy on his political opponents. So he was sending spies into the Democratic, he was a Republican, he was sending his spies into the Democratic head offices to plant bugs and to record their conversations, so he knew what they were planning, so he could be one step ahead of them in the elections. And those spies were actually caught by the security and the police, and then very big investigation took place. And the president was denying his knowledge of this, but he was also recording his own conversations in the White House secretly. So eventually those recordings were subpoenaed by the courts, and he was revealed to have actually been well aware of, he was the mastermind behind this spying operation, and he was going to be impeached, means like removed, voted out of office. So before that happened, he was obliged to resign. That was a little more graceful way to leave office than to be like completely removed. So he resigned from the presidency and was replaced. So Prabhupada often quoted this, and I can just imagine that as Prabhupada is writing this purport, he's talking about the presidents and prime ministers. We see even in this life such big prime ministers, presidents, and others, politicians, because of being non-devotees, fall down. To become president or prime minister is not very easy. One must work very hard. Although one may reach his goal, at any moment one may be kicked down by material nature. In human society, there have been many such instances which great exalted politicians have fallen into historical oblivion. So President Nixon was one such example. And this happened during Prabhupada's time, so he was very, very well aware of his example. Another example of a politician who was also a philosopher and was also came under quite a lot of criticism by Srila Prabhupada was a former president of India. Anyone know who we're talking about? Yes, Dr. Radhakrishnan. So he was first a vice president of India, then he became later the president of India. President of India is mostly a ceremonial post. It's not, he doesn't have much political power like the prime minister, but still it's a very important position. So president of India is, you know, he was pretty much, you know, as senior most person you could say after the prime minister, he had the power to dissolve the government if required. So Dr. Radhakrishnan wasn't just a politician, he was also a scholar and a Mayavadi scholar, and he had written his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. When Srila Prabhupada was first speaking in the early days in 66, 67 in New York, Prabhupada's own Bhagavad Gita wasn't published yet. So he was actually using Dr. Radhakrishnan's translation for his lectures. And he said that the translations are 90% accurate, but the deviation committed by Dr. Radhakrishnan was in the commentaries, in the purports. So Prabhupada actually knew Dr. Radhakrishnan personally. In the 50s, before Prabhupada came to America, there was one time where he was planning to go to Japan. He'd actually got an invitation for a conference there, and he was in correspondence with the organizers. They sent him an invitation letter, and Prabhupada was trying to get a sponsorship to go to Japan, even before coming to America. And he approached different rich people that he knew for sponsoring his ticket. He also approached Dr. Radhakrishnan, at that time was the vice president of India. And he even actually arranged a personal meeting with Dr. Radhakrishnan, but there was no successful outcome. The government wasn't willing to sponsor, and no individual either was willing to sponsor, so Prabhupada wasn't able to go to Japan. But Prabhupada had personal interaction with Dr. Radhakrishnan. Later on also, when Prabhupada printed his Bhagavatam, he presented a copy to Dr. Radhakrishnan. So Prabhupada knew him personally, and he knew him through his translation of Bhagavad Gita also. But the most egregious deviation or wrong interpretation of Bhagavad Gita that Dr. Radhakrishnan had made, Prabhupada was often quoted this, and actually Prabhupada quotes in this verse also, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyati Manmaskuru. So in this verse, when Dr. Radhakrishnan gave his purport, he said that it's not to the person Krishna we have to surrender, but to the unborn, impersonal spirit that is within Krishna. And that was Dr. Radhakrishnan's purport to this verse, where Krishna is saying very directly, surrender to me, become my devotee, worship me. And just like in this verse, he's talking about the Lord's lotus feet. Personal form of the Lord is being stressed. Dr. Radhakrishnan would deny that and said it's the unborn impersonal force that has become Krishna, manifested as Krishna, saying that actually the impersonal form is superior and that impersonal form has taken the form of Krishna. So it's to the impersonal aspect that we should surrender to. So Prabhupada would get very disturbed at this improper translation, where Krishna is very directly saying, me, 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 and Dr. Radhakrishnan is saying, not Krishna, some Shakti behind Krishna. So later on, the devotees asked Prabhupada, can you read from your translation of Bhagavad Gita? And although it wasn't printed, it was just a rough manuscript, Prabhupada was actually quite pleased during the early days, 26 Second Avenue, and they started after that reading from Prabhupada's own manuscript of the Bhagavad Gita as it is. So it's also interesting to note that many years later, in 1972, Prabhupada actually met Dr. Radhakrishnan again after establishing ISKCON, after traveling all over the world with his disciples and starting preaching in India. Prabhupada visited Madras, now it's called Chennai, and Dr. Radhakrishnan was retired there. He was 83 years old and quite bad health. He didn't have very long to live. But the devotees Giriraj Maharaj had arranged that Prabhupada could meet Dr. Radhakrishnan. So Prabhupada and the devotees, they went to visit him at his house, and he was being taken care of by his daughter, who herself was, you know, probably 50, 60. And she told them that he's not in very good condition, but we can meet him. So Prabhupada, when he met him, he immediately again brought up this point, that how is it you're speaking of this unborn, impersonal aspect when Krishna is directly saying, I am here, you know, surrender to me. And so this is described in Shamsundar Prabhu's book, Chasing Rhinos with the Swami. If you haven't read the book, I highly recommend it. The second edition is also out, and this is found in the second volume of Chasing Rhinos. Even before Prabhupada went to America, actually, he used to criticize Dr. Radhakrishnan's translation. And 1950, I think it was 1958, when Prabhupada was printing Back to Godhead magazine in India, many years before going to the West, he also gave some critical commentary on Dr. Radhakrishnan's interpretation. So this is from the 1958 Back to Godhead. We have all respect for Dr. Radhakrishnan because he is not only the second citizen of India, the great world-renowned philosopher and a scholar in the Hindu philosophy, but also he is truthful Brahman with considerable knowledge in the impersonal Brahman. There's a popular saying that there is no harm in creating some antagonism with a great scholar, but there is harm even by creating a friendly relation with the fool. Now, this is like a quotation from these moral stories, like if you have a friend who's a fool, it'll be more dangerous than having an enemy who is, you know, intelligent. So Prabhupada is quoting this and saying, so therefore we are not afraid of Dr. Radhakrishnan when we put forward our critical review of his great scholarly exposition of the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna says, surrender unto me only. But Dr. Radhakrishnan says, surrender not to the person Krishna. Is it not the opposite view to suit the particular type of philosophy followed by Dr. Radhakrishnan? This indirect interpretation of the Mayavadi school for all kinds of revealed scriptures are properly condemned. So the devotees knew that Prabhupada had criticized Dr. Radhakrishnan soundly ever since the 50s. So now Prabhupada is here face to face with Dr. Radhakrishnan, and he was pretty much unable to speak, unable to move. He was, you know, in very elderly and not healthy condition. And Shamsundar describes that Prabhupada greeted him with all respect, but he started arguing that Krishna is a person, it's a personality of Godhead, and to interpret, when Krishna says, aham, I am, and to interpret that differently is a flagrant error. But Dr. Radhakrishnan couldn't actually respond to Prabhupada. So then they understood that, oh, it's not actually the right time to have a conversation. You know, he's not able to respond. He was just like lying there with his eyes open. And so they said, okay, we won't bother him. And then as Prabhupada was leaving, they kind of touched hands. And Dr. Radhakrishnan said, Swamiji, you please pray to God for me. And that was his only response to Prabhupada's, you know, conversation with him. And, you know, Prabhupada went back home and he was commenting that, you know, because this person has committed offenses to Krishna, he's committed an offense by his misinterpretation of Bhagavad Gita, therefore he's in this suffering condition. But he said, actually, he's a gentleman and it's good that he's getting his karma now in this lifetime rather than next lifetime. So he had some sentiment, at least he asked Prabhupada to pray for him so we can hope that, you know, his destination was good. So we've covered President Nixon, we've covered Dr. Radhakrishnan, and there are also other personalities that Prabhupada would often take objection to when you're talking about this Patanti Adha, very big scholars, sannyasis, and impersonalists that consider themselves very elevated, but actually they are not able to maintain that, and they have to come back down to material activity. Prabhupada would often say that there are so many impersonalists, they say Brahman Satya Jagan Mithya is one of their favorite sayings. Brahman Satya means spirit is eternal and this world is false. So Prabhupada would say they believe in this, but if the world is false, then why are they so involved in the world? Because many of these big sannyasis and impersonalists, they would, although professing to be Brahman realized, practically what they would do is perform mundane charity work. They would open schools, open hospitals, and distribute food to the poor, which is just mundane charity. So if the world is mithya, then why are they so involved in these things? And they would coin phrases like Daridra Narayan. There's another phrase that Prabhupada would get very upset. Daridra Narayan means the poor Narayan. This is coined by Vivekananda, who is one of the great spiritual leaders of Bengal and of India, and quite well respected. Prabhupada didn't have much tolerance for his philosophy. So Daridra Narayan, this is also taken up by Gandhi, means the Lord is within the poor person. Therefore, we should serve the poor people. And a similar phrase they coined was Manav Seva, Madhav Seva. Serving humanity is serving Madhava. Now, so these kind of popular phrases, they sound good. Madhav Seva, Manav Seva, Madhav Seva, Brahman Satya Jagan Mithya. Another one is Yatamat Tatapat, very famous in Bengal. It means, whatever opinion you have, that's okay. Pretty much it means whatever you do is okay. And that's basically, it's giving a blanket license to anyone to do anything. Jatamat Tatapat. As your opinion is, so you can do. That many paths there are. It means whatever you do, it's fine. So this kind of perverted philosophy has really polluted the spiritual standards of India. People hear these phrases and they think, oh, we serve humanity, we serve God, we don't need to serve God separately. God is in the poor person. Serving Tulsi is better. Growing eggplant is better than serving Tulsi. This is another famous quote from Vivekananda. At least if you eat eggplant, you get some strength, you get some nourishment. What's the point of serving Tulsi? I think it's also he was the one who said that the fish is the fruit of the river, right? So all these concocted phrases, which became very popular in this last century in India, have really watered down the standard of Indian philosophy. And Prabhupada would take great exception to these phrases. So Prabhupada would say, you know, Daridra Narayan. So Narayan is only in the poor person? What does that mean? The Lord is in everyone's heart. Why only in the Daridra? And this is a concoction. We should give prasad to the poor people also. Sure, we can distribute prasadam to the poor people, but it's not that we don't give prasad to the people who are not poor. Prasad is for everyone. The Lord is in everyone's heart. Yatamat Tatapat, this is nonsense. You know, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what does he say? If you worship the ghosts and spirits, you go to Yanti Deva Vrata, Devan Pintri, Pitrin Yanti, Pritri Vrata. Very clearly Krishna says, you worship the demigods, you go to the demigods. Worship the Pitris, you go to the Pitris. Worship the ghosts and spirits, Bhutani Yanti Bhutyaja, you go to them. And if you worship me, you come to me. So what is this Yatamat Tatapat? That everything you do, you go to the same place. Now, this is not supported by Shastra. Manav Seva, Madhav Seva, also, this is not followed by Shastra. We can serve mankind by giving them Krishna consciousness, by giving the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Simply giving some blanket to the poor person or feeding them some food which is not offered to the Lord, this is not going to give any real benefit. If we give them prasadam, they get spiritual benefit and material benefit. If we give them knowledge about Krishna, then we can help them break out of the cycle of birth and death forever. Otherwise, you may make them a little bit comfortable in this life, but next life they're going to have to go through the same thing again. Better give them knowledge by which they can permanently cure the miseries of material existence, janma, mritu, jara, vyadhi. So, other points in this purport, Prabhupada talks about the lotus blooming, Aravindaksha, the lotus eyes of the Lord. One has to be attracted to the lotus eyes of the Lord. Namo Pankajanabhaya, Namo Pankajamaline, Namo Pankajanetraya, Namaste Pankajangriya. Queen Kunti also describes the Lord in various ways, comparing to the lotus. Though, of course, we know the lotus is simply a comparison. The Lord is much more beautiful than the lotus flower. But lotus is considered the most beautiful of flowers, so therefore, That's the closest thing we can imagine to the beauty of the Lord. So Queen Kunti prays, Navo Pankajanabhaya, the Lord's navel is like a lotus. Also we know that the Lord, from his navel, the lotus came, which Lord Brahma was born on, Padmanabha. He's also wearing the garland of lotus flowers, Namo Pankajamaline. Of course, the lotus eyes, in this verse also it said, Aravindaksha, there are different, many different synonyms for this. Aravindaksha, Pankajanetra, there are many different words for lotus, many different words for eyes. So Pankajanetra, Aravindaksha, the same thing, lotus eyes. And Namaste Pankajangriya, lotus feet. Queen Kunti, she first mentions the Lord's navel, and then she comes to his eyes and then to his feet. Generally, we understand that we're supposed to take darshan of the Lord first looking at the lotus feet. Like when darshan, when the curtains open, the etiquette is to see the deity or even the spiritual master. First, you look at the lotus feet and gradually take darshan of their face. Similarly, we should read Bhagavatam from the first canto, which is compared to the Lord's lotus feet, first and second canto. And then gradually work up our way to this 10th canto, the Lord's, which is considered the Lord's smiling face. Queen Kunti, though, she, in the purport to that verse, it seems that she didn't want to embarrass Krishna because she was Krishna's aunt, like a superior person to Krishna externally. So she didn't start from the feet, she started from the navel and then ended at the feet, just to make Krishna more comfortable. But the point is that attraction for the Lord's, any part of the Lord's body, where his lotus feet, lotus eyes, this is the actual means by which one can attain liberation from the material world. Whereas the impersonalists, the jnanis, yogis, they're not able to, unless they're at some point in their practice, unless they're attracted to the Lord's personal form, attracted to his devotional service, they won't be able to actually attain lasting liberation. Mukti bhukti siddhi kami sakle shanta krishna bhakti nishkam ateva shanta. Another related verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Those who desire liberation, those who desire material enjoyment, those who desire mystic siddhis, yogic siddhis, they are not peaceful. The only person who can be peaceful in this world is the devotee of the Lord, because he has no desire for himself, only he desires to serve Krishna. Aruhya Krishnena, one of the other significant phrases in this verse, is these other processes involve severe penances and austerities. Whether it's the jnanis or the yogis or even the politicians, they have to undergo so much trouble to get their position. One verse in this connection is very interesting. It talks about tapasya. Aratito yadi haris tapasa tataha kim. Naratito yadi haris tapasa tataha kim. So it's pretty much the same words in each verse. In each line, but one is aradito, one is naradito. So it's saying that if one worships the Lord, then what is the use of performing tapasya? And if one doesn't worship the Lord, then what is the benefit of doing tapasya? So it's very interesting, because it seems to condemn tapasya in either case. If one doesn't worship the Lord, all this tapasya is not going to get one very far. And if one actually is worshipping the Lord, then severe tapasya is not required. So for devotees, our tapasya is quite minimal. And maybe on Janmashtami we have a little trouble to fast, or Ekadashi we have to fast from grains and beans, but we don't have to submerge ourselves in water in the winter or surround ourselves by fire in the summer like these other yogis do such things. So those kinds of tapasya are not required for us. And one more verse, which Prabhupada talks about in the Krishna is compared to the daytime. At night, no one can see a lotus, for lotuses blossom only during the daytime. Krishna surya maya hoy antakar jaha Krishna tahe nai maya radikar. The simple translation of this is, Godhead is light, nescience is darkness is ignorance. Where there is Godhead, there is no. Where there is light, there is no ignorance. Where there is Godhead, there is no nescience. So this is the banner of Bhakti Godhead magazine. It's a simple translation of that verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Krishna Surya Sama. Krishna is bright, brilliant like the sun. Actually, he's even more brilliant than the sun. Maya is like darkness. So wherever there is Krishna, in other words, wherever there is light, Maya cannot remain. Maya cannot stand. The darkness cannot stand. And so once we are attracted to the Lord's lotus feet, once we come to the light, tamaso ma jyotirgama, come to the light, leave darkness, come to the light, then we can have darshan of the Lord's transcendental lotus feet. And meditating on the lotus feet, we can gradually meditate on the different parts of the Lord's body, coming to his smiling face and his lotus eyes, which are compared to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this way we can develop that attraction to the Lord, and we can surpass all the goals of these yogis, jnanis, politicians, karmis, impersonalists. We can surpass all their goals, and by being attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, we can actually taste true liberation in devotional service. The last line of the purport, as Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita, when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, then he can enter into the kingdom of God. So it's a very famous shloka. I encourage all of you to learn it. Prabhupada quotes it many, 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 many times. It has very great significance for us. And that, on that note, I'd like to end, unless we have some comments or questions from the Vaishnavas. Yes, Vaikuntha Prabhu. Let someone pass the mic over.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you for a very nice class. You mentioned how Srila Prabhupada often quoted that verse. I believe one lecture he quoted it, you know, in reference to the impersonalists falling down again from the Brahmajyoti, and he said, therefore there's every chance that they may again fall down. Mm-hmm. And then very emphatically he said, why may fall down? They must fall down, because they have not taken shelter of Krishna's lotus feet.
Yes. Thank you. Correct. Anything else?
Hare Krishna, what does it mean to be attached to the lotus feet of Krishna?
What does it mean to be attached to the lotus feet of Krishna? Well, in this verse, you know, Prabhupada talks about being captivated by the lotus eyes or transcendental form of the Lord. Well, one comes to the point of seeing the lotus eyes, of seeing the transcendental form of the Lord, being attached to the Supreme Personality of God and in love. Because the other personalities mentioned here, even the ones on the spiritual path, like the jnanis and yogis, just like Dr. Radhakrishnan, he understood Krishna, you know, he's commenting on Bhagavad Gita, but he doesn't realize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's beyond the Brahmajyoti, and they have it the other way around. They think that Krishna is a manifestation of Brahman. Rather, Brahmajyoti is a manifestation of Krishna's opulence. So he doesn't have attraction to the personal form of the Lord. So, in this verse, that's the contrast. They're neglectful of the Lord's personal form. They might even worship Krishna externally. In fact, even in the paths of Jnana Yoga, there is some worship is recommended. But they think it's the Lord's form is illusory, or it's temporary, or it's not supreme. So therefore they create offenses to the Lord. So they're not attached to the Lord. Whereas the bhaktas, the Vaishnavas, you know, those of us, we come every day to have darshan of Radha Madhav, we want to serve them. We have attraction for his pastimes. We come and hear his glories in the Bhagavatam class. You know, we have some level of attraction to Krishna as a person. So that we have to develop more and more till we come to the point of Primanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochana. You know, we have ecstasy in seeing the form of the Lord. So that may take some more purification, but we follow the process recommended by Srila Prabhupada. I think we can be confident to continue on that path. That answers your question. Any further comment?
Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. My question is that if a fellow devotee falls down, as devotees, isn't our duty to uplift that devotee?
To what?
If a devotee falls down, isn't our duty to uplift that other devotee that falls down? Uplift.
Uplift, yeah, yeah. Yes.
Or is it the karma of that, past karma of that devotee that happens, you know?
Generally, when devotees have trouble, it could be because of material desires, or often it's because of offenses. So when our fellow Vaishnavas have some trouble or they struggle in their devotional service, it's our duty to help them, try to encourage them to come back, try to encourage them to overcome their difficulties with compassion. Sometimes we see in our society when devotees have trouble, others are actually those who are envious of that person, they might actually be even happy to see them in difficulty. But that's not a very Vaishnava way of dealing with such issues. We should always take the humble position. You know, we even hear that Prabhupada would himself be praying that I shouldn't fall into Maya. So if we are actually compassionate on our God brothers, God sisters who are having trouble, we should not broadcast their mistakes. We should try to help them overcome them and forgive them if they've made some mistakes. And the devotee who has trouble also, they should be willing to take the humble position, admit their difficulties, and maybe take a back seat a little bit, work on themselves, do some intense sadhana to purify themselves and try not to create such mistakes again. Atonement is a very powerful powerful method of overcoming such tendencies for slipping on the path of devotional service. So, you know, even in Prabhupada's time, there was one instance where a sannyasi fell down, and one of Prabhupada's senior, maybe secretary or GBC member, actually kind of announced it to the rest of ISKCON, that so-and-so has done such and such, and he shouldn't be trusted, blah, blah, blah. And Prabhupada was not at all happy. He said, no, you've made this public, and now how will he be able to come back? You've publicly shamed him, you're making it very difficult for him to return. Whereas practically when, you know, some devotees like that had trouble, they even fell from sannyas, Prabhupada said, it's okay, just continue your devotional service. If you have to get married, it's not ideal, but just stay in touch with Krishna consciousness, stay on the path of devotional service, and continue. Don't go away, don't leave, don't give up. You know, Prabhupada would give them shelter like that. So we should also try to imbibe that standard that Srila Prabhupada set himself. Jivanath Prabhu.
In regard to devotees leading, Prabhupada once used very early on as an example, he said, even if our Brahmananda were to leave, if you would see him walking down the street smoking a cigarette, he is still to be considered saintly. So we all should be seeing anybody who does devotional service and joins this movement even for a short period of time to be saintly, because it is very rare, anybody coming to Krishna consciousness, it's rare. And if somebody leaves, it's not so rare. People leave all the time and they come back. So, you know, that is the program. It's just to always try to encourage in response to his question. If we, I'll tell you one quick story, is that I know of a friend of mine who left in the 80s. He was a very big book distributor and he left the movement. And Bhakti Tirtha Swami also was a friend of his as well. And when he heard that he left, he drove 1.5 hours, knocked on his door, went in and said, "What, you know, how you doing? You know, you're doing this. I see your place, all that kind of stuff." He says, "Don't you miss distributing books?" He says, "Of course I do. But, you know, I'm having some issues with so-and-so-and-so and this and that and that and that." Bhakti Tirtha says, "Okay, how about this? How about this, me and you go out and we distribute some books together for a little while? What do you think?" He says, "Sure." He says, "Okay." So they went out and distributed some books, and after they finished, he was driving him back. He goes, "What do you think? Maybe we should just go do this more often? Why don't you just get your stuff and we'll leave together? What do you think?" So, I mean, the devotee knew what Bhakti Tirtha Swami was doing, and he grabbed his stuff and he left with him, and he hasn't left the movement since. So that is really our mood, is we should always try to be encouraging everyone to stay. And if someone does leave, just be nice. There is another story of a Swami who came at towards the end. He was a GBC Swami who had left. And when he came back to see Prabhupada towards the end, obviously very humbling, embarrassing position, because he was very special to Srila Prabhupada, did a lot of service. When he came back, Prabhupada just simply commented on his sika, "Where's your wife?" "Oh, that's fine. You're married now. That's wonderful. You've come back." So that's all he cared about. He didn't say, like, you know, "Shame on you for leaving. Shame on you for falling down." Prabhupada never went like that. So.
Yes, thank you. On that note, we can end. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanandi.